WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. I am Jason Mann, and my guest today is one of the forces behind itsrainingmeng.com, but a great name, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Ben Pasco. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here, and I'm the editor, and every time I threaten to fire someone, I've been told that they're going to start the website Everybody Quang Chung tonight. So so now I'm mad because that's a better name than It's Raining Meng.
I don't know. That's pretty good, though. That's a tough one.
Well, It's Raining Meng came from one night we talked about what if Meng sang karaoke, and then we just all put, like, Meng in songs, like Meng and Mrs. Jones got a thing going on, and then we needed a website name, and then It's Raining Meng came up, and we were like, oh, that's genius, all right.
Well done. I would have to say that may be the best named website, wrestling website that I'm familiar with. So
that's why anyone comes to the site is It's Raining Meng. It's just like, you're like, your site's name is Raining Meng? All right, I'm all in.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to draw a good name. You know, it took us a while to come up with Fair to Flair, but
that's a good one, too.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And then, it's funny, though, because people don't come to the site because of Meng. Like, do you have the ability to look at the search terms to get people to your site?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Have you gotten the weirdest stuff ever? Is it just me?
I've gotten some weird stuff. It's been a while since I've looked at it, so I don't remember anything off the top of my head. But, yes, it's definitely it's interesting how people get to your site sometimes.
I got Muscle Wrestler Teaches Lesson, and I was like, whoa, not right.
Okay. I've gotten some fetish ones. I've definitely gotten some, you know, along those lines. But, yeah, people, you know, they have their needs, you know, and I'm not here to judge them.
I am.
Okay, maybe I am here to judge them, but, you know, that's another podcast. So the match that we are going to discuss today, the main event of Survivor Series 1993, the All-Americans of Lex Luger and the Steiners and,
the Undertaker.
And the Undertaker, of course, yes. Who could forget the Undertaker opening his cape and showing the American flag that he was...
Oh, that was awesome.
Indeed a patriot, yes. Taking on the foreign fanatics, who were Yokozuna, Ludwig Borga, Quebecer Jacques, also known as Jacques Rougeau, and the evil Hawaiian Crush.
Because Hawaii isn't part of America.
Well, you know, it's not a real part of America. It's you know, Barack Obama's from there, so it can't be real America.
That's from parts unknown, totally part of America.
Exactly.
Parts unknown, Kansas is where the Undertaker's apparently from.
Right. Well, he's from Death Valley. That one's easy.
That's part true. Of
yeah, you're talking about, like, if Ultimate Warrior had been on this team, that would be confusing. But Undertaker totally makes sense.
Well, you know, the cool thing about that match was the fact that, first off, I'm doing this because I can't talk about the Four Doinks versus Team Bam Bam Bigelow, which is legit my top five favorite matches of all time.
Okay.
Like, but the cool thing about that was how the teams got changed. But as a kid, I was so mad because I was the world's biggest Tatanka fan. And as an adult, I'm mad because they took out Pierre Carroulette and not Jacques Rougeau, because PCO was way better than Jacques, and just, like, looking back on it, it goes, man, I really wish Tatanka and PCO were the ones. Just take out Rick Steiner and Jacques, and it would have been a way better match.
Well, I like Jacques, so I mean, Pierre was a little better at this point, definitely. I think Jacques was better in his prime, but you could take him Crush out, and I would have been fine with that. Although, I guess you need the Crush Savage storyline for part of this match, but I don't know. Lots of shenanigans going on. So you picked this match out of a list of almost, you know, save the shows that I've already done, out of a pretty extensive list of pay-per-view main events. So you just picked it because it was the same show as one of your favorite matches, or were there other reasons as well?
No, I picked it because it's one of my earliest memories, and I can remember this angle pretty vividly. It's like the first full angle I really remember is this one. Like, I remember, like, Yoko beating Brett. I remember, like, 1993 is the first year I can be like, oh, I distinctly remember things that happened that year. Mm-hmm. And so I picked this one because also it's the All-Americans versus the Foreign Fanatics, and it's awesome.
Yes.
Like, everything about this is awesome and jingoistic, and it was in Boston, Massachusetts, and Shawn Michaels had the Hearts. Shawn Michaels fought the Hearts, and Jerry Lawler was in prison or something. It was a great show. It was awesome.
Well, it's interesting that you have such enthusiasm for this time, because myself, I'm my memories go back to like 86 or so. So I was kind of a big fan from 86, 87 on to the early 90s. And kind of by this time, I sort of like, I would watch it occasionally. I'd like probably like watch it once every 6 months and kind of catch up sometimes on videos. And so I sort of half knew what was going on, but, Lex Luger as an American hero was not something that greatly appealed to me.
I was like, it's not that I wanted Lex Luger to ever win. I just really hated Yokozuna because Yokozuna cheated. He cheated to beat Bret Hart for the world title, and that just wasn't going to stand with me. I wasn't going to let that fly. Yeah. That was not all right.
Yeah.
And so whenever I rooted for Lex Luger, I was really just rooting for Yokozuna to lose.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, that's what a good heel does. You know, a good heel makes you, you know, makes you hate him and makes you want the other guy to win, even if the other guy isn't really your cup of tea.
You know, I think out of the group, like, when Tatanka was out, I was disappointed. I think I was an Undertaker fan, but partially because I was terrified into liking him. Because I'm like, I better cheer for him or else I'm dead. Okay. Like, he's going to kill me. It's that simple. Undertaker, you know how he is. He's just turning the lights off and killing people left and right.
Yes, and we definitely don't want that. So, yeah, Yokozuna took out Tatanka and beat him, and that was the end of Tatanka's big winning. Or no, I take that back. I think Borga actually ended the winning streak of Tatanka, and then Yokozuna took him out afterward or something. I don't remember the particulars of that. Do you recall that? Or
I remember. I know it was Yoko that took him out.
Right.
I don't remember what the win – I didn't even know, like – when he lost, because
it was, it was just before this, because Borga was the one, at least according to my notes, Borga was the one who beat him. So then I think they mentioned it during the commentary. So
it was before he got the curse of death of having Chief J. Strongbow as his manager, which I remember being, even as a kid, being like, oh no, that can't be good.
I don't even remember that.
I remember because he lost to Yokozuna of all people in a King of the Ring qualifying. Huh. Must have been 1994.
Okay.
These are the things I remember. I remember Chris Chavez's career, but I can't remember where I put my keys in the morning. Yeah, and then they beat the crap out of him. I remember being like horrified. Like what are they gonna do? Like 4-on-3, that's not a Survivor Series. That's just not fair. And then Lex Luger beat up PCO. And, you know, it's all the fact he was allowed to cheat. Lex Luger was allowed to cheat with that forearm. You know, I never really liked that as a kid.
That was sort of strange. That was sort of like an odd you could understand, like, the good guy cheating if it's somehow justified. But it wasn't like Lex Luger was justified, and he would just, you know, randomly nail people with it the same as he did as a villain. And no one, you know, apparently it was okay because he loves America.
I don't even know if PCO was there when they jumped Tatanka. Like, I don't even know if Pierre Carolette was, like, or Pierre was, like, there when they beat Tatanka, and he got the brunt of it.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, it's collateral damage, which America knows a lot about, you know? A lot of horrible things have been done and justified in America's name, so this is just one of them.
Yes, I guess you can make Yokozuna Pearl Harbor Tatanka jokes, which the poor Indian just, like, can't catch a break.
That's true. Really suffering for two causes, you know?
It's like, why would you go after Tatanka? It's like, go after Scott Steiner and be like, let's go after Steiner so he doesn't drop us on our heads and end our careers.
Right.
Let's not go after the dude that does the war dance.
Well, you know, that's I don't know if this is just the strategic thinking behind the Foreign Fanatics was that fantastic. But then again, you know, you have Jim Cornette, you've got Mr. Fuji and Johnny Polo. You've got three managers there.
Here's a crazy thing about Johnny Polo is that as much as this is one of my earliest memories, it's like what they did to Benoit in terms of Benoit doesn't exist. That's how my memories remember Johnny Polo. Because I remember things that involve Johnny Polo directly like this. But then when I can remember images, but just Johnny Polo isn't there. And then going back on it, I'm like, I don't even remember Johnny Polo. I know he was there. I remember Adam Bomb. I remember the Quebecers. I remember them losing the tag titles. I just don't remember Johnny Polo.
Yeah. I remember Johnny Polo, who, for people who don't know, is Raven. Who did commentary with Gorilla Monsoon for a while, which was kind of – Gorilla's best days were behind him, but I kind of enjoyed the potential of that tandem.
I think that Raven should really make a killing by appearing as Johnny Polo on shows now. Like, people would – it's like how Godfather's doing Papa Shango now. Mm-hmm. Raven would probably make a decent amount of money if he appeared as Johnny Polo a couple times because people would be like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
You know, just dye your hair back a normal color and then just dress like it. Come on, Raven. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, maybe WWE would give him an offer to come back as Johnny Polo for like the Rumble next year like they did for Diesel.
That would be awesome. And yes. That would be awesome and confusing.
It would be awesome and confusing, which is how professional wrestling is at its best.
This is true.
Yes.
Johnny Polo was awesome, though. Like, when you go back, there's, like, a YouTube video all about his commentary. Mm-hmm. Like, just the stupid things he would say. Like, he's, like, an entertaining Michael Cole in terms of being an idiot, a goober.
Right. Exactly. He understood how to do that. And didn't seem to dominate the conversation. You know, he knew his place.
No, and he was awesome, like, little slimy little dude. It's crazy it ends up being Raven. Like, when you look back, you go, oh, that's Raven. There's a party that goes, no, it can't be. Surely not. It must be. No, it's Raven. That's so Raven. Wear a ring jacket.
Right. So, I don't know if you saw this part, but I watched the very, very opening of the show, and they have, Lex Luger in a sweater and also other clothes, but his wife and then two young children apparently hit, presumably his, and we get like a holiday greetings from his family to us. So I thought that was a very heartwarming moment. And Lex's wife has even less charisma than he does.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I always thought Lex got a little bit of a bad rap, but at the same time, he really wasn't that good.
No.
Like, he wasn't that bad, but he wasn't that good.
No. Lex has had periods of his career where he actually was pretty good. I don't think this was one of them, though.
Was this before or after Yokozuna tried to kill Jim Duggan?
I believe this is after.
Okay. Because this is a sidebar. Do you remember when Jim Duggan's wife gave a dramatic plea on television to leave Jim, to let Jim Duggan retire peacefully so he doesn't die?
No. Was this WWE or?
It haunted my dreams. Yeah, it was WWF. It was, that's after Yokozuna tried to kill Jim Duggan. Yokozuna attempted murderer.
Yeah.
He tried to kill. I'll talk about that later. But no, like, he had beat, like, that was when Yokozuna was terrifying. Like, as a kid, just like this big man is just squashing people, you know, sitting on Dan Dubai, almost killing him.
Yeah.
So he just, like, he beat the crap out of Duggan, and then Duggan's wife was just like, he can't come back. Please, fans, don't let him come back, blah, 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 blah. And then he came back, and then just everyone forgot that Jim Duggan almost died.
Right.
And then, like, he was losing to, like, the Repo Man a week later.
Yeah.
Good comeback, bro.
Well, Duggan was almost – he was almost out by this point. He didn't last into 94, I don't think.
No, then he went to WWE. Went to WCW.
Yeah, he debuted at the Fall Brawl when he beat Steve Austin in 20 seconds.
Oh, my God. One of the stupidest fucking things ever.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this, but that's the thing that got me is that was still so dumb.
Yeah. It is quite dumb, yes. I certainly would give you that. Although the thing about Yoko is he lost a lot on pay-per-view. Like, not – he didn't get pinned much, but he – well, he got pinned by Hogan, obviously. Then he beat Hogan, but it was through shenanigans at King of the Ring 93. Then he loses to by count out.
They lost to Lex Luger by count out. Oh, my God. That was crap. Now I'm getting angry again. I've been watching the pay-per-view be like, Lex Luger, wait a minute. Yokozuna's the title. Like, I want – so many WWE pay-per-views ended with me just going to bed angry.
Yeah.
People like, well, America lost. I hope you're happy, Lex Luger.
Right.
You dropped the ball. Bret Hart would have never let this happen.
Yeah. Well, Luger was able to get one back for America here at least.
This is true. And then Ludwig Borga, the world's most dangerous environmentalist.
Yes.
I don't even think he stuck around much in the 94.
I don't. I feel like maybe he's in that 10 man that didn't happen at WrestleMania 10, where like I seem to recall like he's among the people who are like arguing, and they have like that backstage segment where they're arguing, and Vince is like, "Oh, we got to cancel the match now," and then they go on to the next thing. But I could be wrong about that.
Oh, I guess according to Wikipedia, he hurt his match with Rick Steiner, and then he was supposed to be at WrestleMania against Earthquake.
Ah.
Apparently he didn't. Yeah, he was only there for a year. He was scary.
Yeah.
Just someone scary when they're wearing MMA gloves in 1993.
Right. I actually was kind of impressed by him here. I never really thought of him as a guy who I never really thought much of him, but I thought his offense looked really good, and it was kind of different than everyone else's. Like it was definitely a little stiffer. It was definitely, you know, he didn't move awesomely or anything, but I thought, you know, he showed some at least basic competency, and I'll take that in a 1993 heel, you know.
Yeah, he wasn't as bad as you remembered.
No, I sort of enjoyed that. So, but yeah, and then of course, you know, Yoko, he did win. He won the Royal Rumble 94, but again, had 12 other guys who helped him.
Who, Yoko? Yoko won in 93.
No, I mean, he beat Undertaker in 94.
Oh, never mind. I'm sorry.
Right. He beat him in the casket match.
Yes, he tried to kill the Undertaker. Yokozuna, right. Attempted murder.
Yeah, he does a lot of attempted murder, it seems like. And then he loses at WrestleMania. You know, it's like he sort of lost a lot, even though he was like this kind of this dominant guy. And I guess that was kind of a short period of time too.
Once he lost the belt, it was just done. It was just like Job and Yoko losing everywhere.
But even in that year that he had the belt, he still lost quite a bit. More than I would have thought.
Well, yeah, but that's true. But I guess it was weird with Yoko. He was a cowardly monster, kind of.
Right.
Like, in terms of, like, the whole what he was afraid of. And then, you know, because you can't have him beat Lex Luger clean and be like, oh, Lex Express, America loses. Sorry, people.
Yeah.
But then Vince McMahon just like, oh, do I really want this guy at the head of my company? But Lex Luger, all-American Lex Luger. He was around a lot longer than I remembered.
Yeah, because he was until 95.
Yeah, I was watching a lot of Rumbles and before the Royal Rumble. I was just like, Lex Luger just kept showing up at him. I'm like, you're still around? I thought you were gone by now. Like, in his awesome tag team with the British Bulldog that I actually really liked, and then British Bulldog turned his back on America.
Yeah.
Lex Luger's one of those guys who can't keep a friend.
No. Well, I don't think Lex Luger seems like much of a friend, though. I mean, he seems sort of like always sort of conceited and self-absorbed, so I don't know why you'd want him as your friend. Unless you really love America.
That's true. But if you do, like, at the same time, just like, I love us. I love America. But he's a really bad friend. And you have to have that moment where he's like, I'm turning my back on my country and then being friends with Lex Luger.
Right.
The only one who never turned his back on Lex Luger was Sting, of all people. Because Sting is an iron patience.
Yeah.
It's the God thing. It's the being like, Sting has, there's, I can't think of the word. I don't know, something good about himself where he can deal with Lex Luger's crap.
Okay, yeah, he's got that. He's selfless. He has just that. I don't know what it is either, but it doesn't matter.
And Lex Luger thought Sting turned on WCW, so that just proves to you, Lex Luger, not a good friend. He will not back you up.
Maybe not a great judge of character either.
He'll back up your country, but not your friend.
Right. So the funny thing about this whole Foreign Fanatics All-Americans thing is how – It's very much old timey wrestling, and of course WWE, you know, for the many many times throughout the years, it's very much like, oh, we're sports entertainment, we're above that, we're different from that, we're not that. But then when like the chips are down, they go back to it a lot. It feels like.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Like, I think this is like one of those things where nothing is really complex about how this match came together or what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's about, we love America, but we hate America. Let's wrestle. You took one of our guys, we'll take one of your guys. Which, that was a nice twist. We talked about it a little bit, but that was a really nice twist that they did.
Right.
Where they like eliminated a team member beforehand.
Mm-hmm. And then brought in the new guys and created some, you know, aura around, you know, particularly Undertaker and Crush too. They kind of, Crush had recently turned.
Yokozuna tried to kill him.
Right, Yokozuna tried to kill him, and then Savage, he went for the save, but not till it was kind of late. And then Crush was mad at Savage for not helping him out earlier.
And so, much like 14-year-old girls, he decided to paint his face
right. And
try to hurt people.
Yes.
So, Crush dealt with that rationally by being like, well, I'm going to change my look. Brr, brr, brr.
Yeah,
My Chemical Romance, purple, 15 basically. Years earlier.
Yeah. But yeah, basically going from orange to purple, I think, or dark purple. Sort of, you know, he was almost a little – I mean, he was goth in the 1993 sense. I mean, 1993 is a very bright, colorful, you know, like not a lot of neon there. So you're not really going to get too dark unless you're Undertaker. But even he had American flags in his robe. So, you know, you can't – he wasn't that dark. But I think Crush was about as dark as 93 could get. You know, so sort of a deep purple kind of thing.
Yeah, Crush has got to be, if we go back in wrestling history and look at the evolution of someone's look, Crush has got to be up there in terms of just going all over the place.
Right.
Like, it starts off as Demolition.
Right.
Goes into Dago Crush.
Mm-hmm.
Crush. Goes into this Kona Crush.
Sure.
Goes to comes back as a prisoner.
Right.
Then he becomes a biker. Then he just becomes Bryan Adams.
Yeah.
Then he becomes the Kiss Demon. Then he becomes just Chronic with the little triangle beard.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's
most of
the Gog levels.
I mean, most of the – I would say most of the look post-96 is basically variations of the same look. I mean, he pretty much at that point, it's you know, black and white. You know, I mean, the Kiss thing's obviously a little more complicated, but the rest of it was basically like, you know, like it's all kind of variations of the same thing, I would say. But still a lot of different variations within that.
Yeah, like when you think of a guy who you realize how long he was around, and then you go, man, he really went through a lot of stuff. Like, the only person I can think of more is Barry Darso.
Right. I mean, and at least Crush kept his name. I mean, yeah, he had Bryan Adams, but I mean, basically, you know, it wasn't like he had a whole lot of different, like, gimmicks. He was still the same guy, and, you know, with basically, you know, the same name. It was just all these different, you know, iterations.
I'm Crush from jail. I'm Crush in a biker gang. I'm Crush, except I'm Bryan Adams in the NWO.
Right.
Which I always love looking at Bryan Adams accidentally stumbling upon heaven. And I'm just like, aw, that's beautiful.
Right. I'm a Run to You fan myself, but that's just
I gotta go with Heaven on that one.
Okay.
Heaven is just it's such a good song. Like, if you take any moment in your life that's beautiful and you put Heaven to it, it's twice as beautiful.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that, but so anyway, the match. We should probably talk a little bit about the match. One thing before we mention the match that I want to talk about is apparently Yokozuna had been on Conan O'Brien the night before this show.
What?
Which is something I need to see. I didn't check to see if it was on YouTube, but I can do that now.
I don't.
Because
I have.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Yokozuna on Conan O'Brien is something that just I feel like it.
I've seen because when Fritz Ray Mamie used to do cameos of the day, and it got to a point where I was just looking for talk show appearances, I saw Cornette and Yoko on Regis and Kathy, which is hilarious because mainly of Jim Cornette. But I had no idea Yokozuna was on Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
I don't – unfortunately, I don't see anything.
And it's somewhere.
It comes up. So I'm sure it's somewhere. It exists on the internet. So if anyone wants to find that for us and hook us up, that would be awesome.
I found some gnarly, ridiculous things on the internet involving wrestling. I'm sure it exists somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, Conan's so awkward in 93. That would be fun.
That was back when he wasn't funny.
Right.
That was 93. Was 93 when he got the show?
I think so, yeah.
Because I know there's an old joke about how he wasn't funny for the first 3 years.
Yeah. Which I don't think is entirely true, but he definitely had a lot of kinks to work out. I think there were moments of genius in the awkwardness, but yeah, he certainly didn't. He wasn't as awesome as he became.
No,
it's like for wrestling, you need time to develop your craft.
Yeah, we don't have a talk show host developmental system.
No, we don't. We really should, though.
And if they did, Jimmy Fallon would get called up way too early.
Yeah. Jimmy Fallon did okay with the. He's actually a little better now. I sort of like the show even with his weaknesses because I think some of his other things kind of work out. Not that I watch it a whole lot.
My thing is I don't watch Jimmy Fallon, but Jimmy Fallon about once a month has a clip come out that's really funny, and so
right.
I'm just like, you know what? At the end of the day, I still like him more than Jay Leno.
Sure. Oh yeah. Oh, of course.
Person in the world.
Right.
Like, when I hear people talk about Jay Leno, I get mad.
Yeah. Is he worse than Yokozuna?
Jay Leno tried to kill a man's career.
Okay.
One time what class was it? In some communications class, and people were talking about late night shows. Someone's just like, well, I hate Dave Letterman. I'm like, well, Jay Leno's the worst person in the world. And a bunch of people got mad at me. And I'm just like, well, you're all at least in your 30s. Because if you're under 27 and you like Jay Leno, I'm not your friend. Like, I used to watch his monologues when I was a kid being like, these aren't funny. Like, I don't like this. I'm only watching it because I was hoping that Eric Bischoff would show up.
So how do you feel about Jay Leno's wrestling career?
I bought that pay-per-view.
I did too.
I bought that pay-per-view, and I'm not going to – Jay Leno had a big part of it. But the main part of it was just like the Wolf Pack and the NWO going to Battle Royal with Goldberg. Oh, I got to see this. And then it was crap. Oh, my God. I don't remember, like – I was a kid, so I didn't hate it. I'm sure if it happened now, I'd be like, this is the stupidest thing ever. But I like celebrities in wrestling. Like – I thought Kevin Federline, when he was in WWE, was one of the best things they've ever done.
Yeah, I love Floyd Mayweather. I think that's one of the best things they've ever done, the Floyd Mayweather Big Show match. So I think celebrities used right absolutely are terrific. I'm not sure Jay Leno was used all that well, but I mean, you know, it wasn't like a disaster or anything.
Well, there's like legitimate sports backgrounds. That's like a little bit different. Like I remember I watched the Lawrence Taylor Bam and Bigelow match being like, this is way better than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
I guess kind of testament to Bam Bam. But yeah, I like when they have like celebrities to some extent. Like even like when they had the guest host and it was John Heater of the Big Show and Chris Jericho against Hornswoggle and DX. It was actually really, really funny because John Heater like would just came out in this ridiculous robe, blowing feathers into the crowd. Mm-hmm. It's like that's what celebrities should do. Not like Jay Leno like beat up Hulk Hogan in that match. That was the thing that everyone hates.
Yeah. Well, I think he gave him a headlock. I think was what it was.
And it was something stupid. We're just being like,
right.
That's the world champion WCW. Like when David Arquette won the title, I was legitimately excited. Mm-hmm. I was. I remember being like, this is awesome. And then like when you join the internet, you have to learn that Chris Benoit is the greatest wrestler of all time. The David Arquette thing killed WCW and that your opinion is invalid if you don't have the correct grammar. Those are the three things they teach you as soon as you join an internet wrestling board.
Okay.
It's like they give you a card. Just like, oh, just memorize these three things. You'll be okay.
Okay. Well, I'm sort of with you on the grammar thing, but the other two things are a little silly.
This is like opinions that everyone shares, and then when someone goes against that opinion,
right. Well, my card was revoked years ago, so that's okay. You know, I don't need a smart card so much. You know. So anyway, we have one thing I do like here is we do all the entrances. And Undertaker's lights go out, and they do a bit where Heenan gets frightened and cowers underneath Vince. Our commentators, by the way, are, of course, Vince McMahon and Bobby Heenan. And I enjoyed that. And there's a nice little bit where, like, Johnny Polo motions to the crowd to be quiet because they're excited about the Undertaker's entrance. Like he motions them to be quiet because he wants, you know, apparently intense concentration for his men.
I also the fact that there's like a like I know the Steiners and Luger, like they wear like the all American gear.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like I love whenever teams like always have matching colors.
Yes.
All be old fashioned. But like even at the Survivor Series was there a Survivor Series match? Yeah, this year at the Survivor Series, they did that. I think it was like one of the teams, like they just all wear the same color. Like, I just love when guys all have matching gear. It's just a weird thing that I like, but.
I know, I agree. That's a nice thing. It's a nice, like, small touch. You know, it's a subtle touch, but it works out very well. I like little things like that to promote unity and to, you know, and so on and so forth.
And usually it's when the guys are all in the same color, just like those are usually the good guys. Like, these guys all match. Root for them.
Yeah,
because they're coming together against the odds.
Yeah, they're a good team. So, so we start off with a stare down between Yokozuna and Undertaker. The good guys encourage the crowd to chant USA. Where meanwhile, Crush gives it a thumbs down
because that Crush.
Yeah,
That dastardly fellow.
He is indeed. So the announcers take the moment to mention that Luger, how articulate he is, which is an interesting thing to promote, and that he was a straight-A student in school. Now, I don't think Luger has ever demonstrated much articulation or brain power in his wrestling character.
I guess it's really smart to hit people with a surgically implanted forearm. I guess that's smart.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that. That's good strategy. Never mind then. I am incorrect. So we start off with Jacques teasing, or he wants to shake hands. He wants to be a friendly sort of fellow. And then Scott sort of gives him the up yours symbol, which I don't think is very sporting or accommodating or really very in keeping in the spirit of America.
Scott Steiner's always just been a jerk when he wrestles, even when he's a good guy. He's always just been a mean person.
Yeah.
Like, now, he's kind of like gotten like, you know, everyone loves Scott Steiner now. I think we all universally love Scott Steiner because sure. We know he's insane.
Right.
But at the time, we were being like, I was just like, man, Scott Steiner's really, like, even when he wrestled the Hart family, he was just kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, Scott always has sort of been, I mean, it shouldn't really have been a huge surprise that he kind of finally, you know, he kind of went crazy and did, you know, the Big Papa Pump thing. You know, I mean, it was a bit of a surprise because it was just a stark contrast. But he kind of always, looking back on it, you can kind of see that he always had that in him.
Yeah, and he turned heel in WCW for like 2 weeks. And cut this. I heard about it and I watched the promo where he cuts this insane Scott Steiner promo about beating people up. And then, like, 3 weeks later, he was just like, oh, hey, I'm Scott Steiner again. Frankensteiner, Missy Hyatt. Woo!
When was that? Was that, like, 90? Was that Bill Watts' time? Like, 91, 92?
I think so. I think the deal was they wanted him and Rick to fight. I think that's what sent him to WWF. They wanted him and Rick to fight. And he was just like, no, I want to be a tag team or something like that.
I heard he left because they wanted to break up the team because he was TV champion at that point.
Yeah, and then I think they wanted him to go heel. He didn't want to do it.
Okay, and I've wondered what would have happened if Scott Steiner had turned. I've always kind of thought the prime time would have been like 94 and been the guy who feuded with Bret Hart after Owen.
I don't know. I don't know if Bret and Scott Steiner would have worked out.
You don't think so?
I think that, you know, Scott Steiner's whole thing is almost paralyzing people, and I don't know how kindly Bret would have taken to almost being, you know, neck broken every night.
Well, I don't know. I think I sense Bret as being okay with some physicality. I mean, he was a pretty physical guy too. I mean, he was always the safe guy. But
I always thought that when he turned to Big Papa Pump, Steiner got less reckless. In terms of his wrestling?
Yeah.
Like, the Steiner brothers back, like 93, like, even, like, I have the match on the background I'm talking to you. Like, they, like, just would just toss people like nothing and almost end lives.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how they were, and I don't know, like, they need to, like, calm down and grow into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Steiner, when he was Big Papa, he was over. And he had some good matches, but you realize they didn't have to do a hell of a whole lot, you know. Except every now and then, I still love having him bust out the Frankensteiner once a year, and everyone freaks out because awesome.
Yeah,
because you forget that he can still kind of do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, by 98 or so, he was physically. He definitely declined physically, and he was obviously much bigger too. So I'm just kind of curious of how it worked out if he could have pulled off that character that early, and if that would have like made a difference in his career. I mean, he was still a big deal, obviously, but whether that would have, because the Steiners really, their usefulness kind of ended around 93, 94 for the most part. I mean, they were fine, but it's not like they were doing anything that fantastic after, you know, basically into their WWF run.
I think the first year back in WCW was some awesome stuff.
Oh, really?
I know they have a match with the Faces of Fear. Mm-hmm. That's goddamn ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Which also has one of my favorite moves of all time, where Barbarian suplexes. I mean, he back body drops Scott Steiner into Meng, who gives a powerbomb, which I thought was a move I made up when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those moves where you do with your action figures, then you're just like, oh my god, that happened in real life. Holy crap.
Yeah.
But then they had like the WC. Because Scott was still a babyface in 97 because he wrestled at the Starcade.
Right, yeah, he turned in Super Bowl 98.
Yeah, and so Yeah, there was like a two or three appearances where just kind of being the Steiners, fighting the NWO, not really doing anything super special.
Right. I mean, yeah, they had some good stuff at the time, but...
Yeah, I'm going to look back on they had really good matches, but there's nothing, like, absurdly memorable after, like, 94.
Right. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think if Scott had turned in 94, we wouldn't have missed a whole lot, and it could have been interesting to see what would happen. But, you know, obviously we'll never know. So, and it may very well have failed. But
those are guys that they never really stayed in one place for a long time until that final WCW run.
Right.
Like, they were in ECW. I want to see their ECW stuff because I can imagine that people got really hurt.
Yeah.
Well. Like, did they wrestle Mikey Ripwreck? Because I certainly hope not.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know much about their stint there, honestly. So, but I feel like they would have been among the more safer people in ECW, at least at certain points.
This is true. That's a very valid, very, very valid point.
Yeah. So, back to the match, we have I like that we get a belly-to-belly right away by Scott on Jacques. Rick in, and then I love Jacques cowardly running away and tagging into Yoko. Rick and Yoko fight for a while. Then Rick's able to knock Yoko out of the ring, but then he gets up quickly back onto the apron. Then Rick gets stuck in the heel corner. Borga pounds on him for a while and dumps him. We knocked down a cameraman because of that. But then Rick is able to pop back up and get a top rope shoulder block. So we start off pretty fast and furious. And then not too much longer, Rick comes off the top. And then Borga kind of awkwardly rolls through and ends up pinning him. And Rick sort of sells an injury, I guess, to his neck to sort of explain his loss. Because it wasn't really – didn't really come off that well. It wasn't like a move that necessarily should have eliminated him, which was kind of a weird Survivor Series thing they would do anyway where, like, guys would sort of lose to transitional moves.
Yeah, because you can't have everyone doing the – I know that later in the match, like, Luger wins. I forget what Luger does. He does something where I'm like, really, that pinned him? I guess it's just sort of how it is. Like, you can't have everyone do their finisher all the time.
I agree. But I don't mind that sort of at the end because I can see, okay, the accumulation of fatigue of being in one of these matches where they're generally longer than regular matches and you have a lot of guys and that sort of thing. Like, I think it sort of makes sense for it to happen later in the match. Earlier in the match, though, it's more iffy.
Yeah, I just rewatched that roll-up, and that just looks awkward.
Yeah.
It looks like he tried to power slam him, but he just kind of, like, forgot what he was doing. Like, yeah, that was...
A body press or whatever it was, didn't look that good. But we move on fairly quickly from that. And at some point during this time, I love Bobby Heenan saying that he hates cheaters.
Bobby Heenan's just a great man.
He's a great man.
If anyone ever says, "No, I love about Bobby Heenan," and then the response isn't immediately everything, I don't know what to say.
How'd you feel about Bobby Heenan and Vince together?
I've always liked Heenan and Vince together. Like, I think that Vince always kind of had a bit more. I feel like I don't know. It isn't as good as Gorilla as Monsoon, but I always liked the Vince Heenan team. I feel like Vince didn't feed into the jokes as much though, which kind of made it a little bit funnier. Like, Monsoon would feed into him, be like, "Will you stop it?" Vince would just be like, "I don't know what you're saying, Bobby."
Yeah, I see that. They had sort of a different kind of chemistry, but I thought it worked. You know, I mean, Heenan could pretty much roll with anybody, except maybe Tony Schiavone. But even they had some moments of, you know, of goodness together. Many more moments of not so much goodness, but, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. So back into the match, we have Jacques back in. Scott gives him a very, very long press slam, tosses him into Crush, who actually manages to catch him. And then I love Jacques here where he sort of thanks Crush, and then he thumbs his nose outrageously at Scott, as if my guy just caught you, na-na-na-na-boo-boo.
Oh, Jacques Rougeau is such a piece of crap. it's awesome, but then you realize that I guess he's like that in real life. I guess he's just a really not a good person.
Oh yeah. Oh. Well.
And so you're just like, man, Jacques Rougeau's kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's good for the character anyway. It was a nice moment of the match.
Yes. Very un-Mountie-esque because they are not the Mounties.
No, they are not. Yeah. So we have Crush wanting a test of strength, but then suckering Scott in and punching him down. Scott later gets a double underhook. At this point, Vince mentions that Savage is in the building, so we expect shenanigans along with Crush soon. And even though I'm pretty anti-Crush for many reasons, mostly because he ruined Demolition, I will give him some props here in that he had a nice leapfrog and then nailed Scott with a nice super kick. So I will give Crush. He was agile and he did have some athleticism to him, especially pre-prison.
That is true. Before prison took the his heart away from him.
Yeah.
Like, Crush wasn't that bad. Like, I got these ones guys that, like, it's like Test. People just look back and like, man, he was awful. I'm like, he really wasn't that bad.
I don't know. I think actually Test is a pretty good comparison because they were kind of guys who were in and were expected big things out of because they were big in athleticism, but they just didn't really have, like, the where, you know, the ability to, like, think and to put a match together and have, like, the mental aspect of wrestling that, you know, separates the great wrestlers from guys who can, you know, just kind of do cute stuff.
The other guys who are like 90, who are like 75% there and just never completely clicked. Although, like, you know, Crush when, I'm sorry. For a while, their Test was really, really over. Like, where it just, like, it looked like it was going to be him, and then it just never. And then The Triple H thing happened. The Triple H thing killed him. And then remember Testicles? Testicles was over. Like, that was a big thing. Like, millions of signs, people would be like, Test is coming out, yeah! And then they screwed that up, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like Test may have been his own worst enemy to a certain extent, too. I mean, I mean, there are probably opportunities where they could have made a big deal about him, but there probably are good reasons why they didn't.
Yeah, his WCW stuff was, I mean, WCW, his, why did I say WCW? I'm sorry. His big boot was actually really, really awesome. Like, Test Big Boot was always my finisher in the SmackDown games. It was dirty. Like,
yeah, he had a pretty good big boot. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
There's like montages on YouTube dedicated to it. Like, it's so good.
Well, there you go. So we have, at this point, we have Savage comes to, tries to make his way to the ring, but we have like a gang of suits who will not allow him to do this.
A gang of suits and Bart Gunn.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Which Mark is Gunn weird. Left. Yeah. And meanwhile, Crush sort of randomly just press slams Scott Steiner to the floor, which sort of seems randomly
berserker-esque.
See a lot. Yeah. So I guess Scott got a little bit of his own medicine in the taking big bumps kind of stuff, taking something vicious. Then we have Crush with a bunch of kicks and a hard leg drop, sort of emphasizing the martial arts. I will say that I sort of enjoyed his offense here, and did a jumping headbutt, works the leg, and sort of slows things down. Then we have Savage trying to get back to the ring again, and then Scott is able to dropkick Crush out. Crush then decides to run after Savage, and then kind of a cool thing where he tries to press Savage, but then Savage sort of punches out of it, and they brawl for a bit, and then Crush is countered out. Fans were definitely into this. They were definitely into the Savage-Crush story, which I guess, you know, because Savage was involved, and Savage was awesome. And it was, you know, and I think Crush did a nice job with the character work of, you know, his turn and his motivations behind it and so on and so forth.
Is the Crush Randy Savage WrestleMania match good? I haven't seen it in so long, but I remember being like, as a kid, I remember when Crush got tied up in the back during that match. I remember like freaking out, being like, "Yes, Randy Savage, you genius!"
I have not watched it in a very long time. I have a feeling it would not age well, but I don't think it's like awful. I think it's just sort of like, you know, entertaining crap, basically.
Because I know there's talk of it's Randy Mangum trying to watch all the WrestleManias before the next one, and I don't think I can do it.
Wow.
But, like, I know that's one. I'm looking forward to that match.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly fine. It's fun, but it's a little silly, perhaps. But you know, I think it works.
All right.
I'm interested in seeing it, too, now that you mentioned it, because I probably haven't seen it since I was, like, you know, 16 or 17 or something. So
it's like crazy the matches you like remember. I remember, like, that's probably the most vivid thing. I know Brett wins the title, but I can remember the finish to that match.
Okay.
Like, what, like 19 years later?
Sure.
Just like I can remember, you know, one of my WrestleMania 13, that's Austin Brett. You know what my favorite match was for a long time on that show before I realized Austin Brett was really good?
The six-man?
The six-man Legion of Doom, everything with the, and they brought the kitchen sink. And I'll never forget, they brought the kitchen sink.
That actually is a pretty good match. I think it's still, it's been a long time since I watched it too, but that's an enjoyable one as well.
I literally, like, it's, one is Ahmed Johnson in shoulder pads.
Right.
And two, it's the kitchen sink. I remember being like, Mom, I brought the kitchen sink. She's like, oh, God, the decisions I let you make.
Your mom sounds like she was accommodating.
Good times.
Yes. So Crush is eliminated. Then we or he was counted out. Yes, he's eliminated. So the heels work over Scott in the corner, and Jacques comes in and hits a nice pile driver, which we get the immortal Heenan line. Yeah, that won't work because Scott having nothing in his head. We have Scott punching him in the gut, and Jacques takes just a really great bump on Jacques. One of the cool things that he did was he would run off the ropes. He would get the punch to the stomach, and then Jacques would completely roll over and do a flip bump on the punch. It was something that he did marvelously, particularly when he was Fabulous Rougeau. And then pretty close afterwards, Scott's able to finally get the hot tag, and then Luger wins with his cheating forearm off of the second rope. So, interestingly here, the Foreign Fanatics are down 3-2, which is sort of an odd that the good guys have the numbers advantage in this situation in the main event when they're sort of fighting against all odds kind of thing.
Well, I guess kind of the deal with that was that they're down 3-2, but it's Yokozuna and Ludwig Borga who are being built as, you know, Yoko's a monster and Ludwig Borga is like the next monster.
Yeah, but you so have
Undertaker. It's like, we're down 3-2, but it barely counts.
But you have Undertaker and Lex Luger.
Which, by the way, is Undertaker even tagged into the match yet?
No, he did not. Well, that's
yeah, I'm watching the match right now, and Undertaker, yeah. 20 minutes in, finally comes into the match.
Literally is almost 20 minutes in. That's funny. I wonder if he was hurt or something. He took a lot of time off after Rumble 94, obviously. So I'm wondering if maybe, you know, he couldn't do much in this match. That's the reason, because he's not in it that long either. Although he looks fine, so I don't know.
Yes, well, Undertaker, you know, he's hurt. I mean, he's hurt every year.
That's true.
Like, well, starting back in 93.
Yeah. Well, he was not as hurt as
he wrestled last year. Wasn't it like he had one arm or something crazy? And he still had a ridiculous match?
Yeah. He had some sort of – yeah, he had some bicep thing or some sort of torn bicep, I think, because he was – they were talking about him not being able to do it.
And then they had a match where if you watch that Undertaker-Triple H match, they do maybe 12 things.
Yeah.
Like, literally you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like – everyone tells it's a great match. It was a pretty good match, but it's just like they did 12 things.
Yeah.
Like – that's literally all they did. Undertaker, I think, took like a million moves and didn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, and Shawn, I don't know, the Shawn Michaels matches were kind of the same thing, where there was a lot of a lot of the moves and then the long pause and they get up and the moves and sort of.
Shawn ones were different though. Like the Triple H one was that, literally, like the Shawn ones, I know there was more stuff happening. And there was more reckless stuff happening.
Okay.
Which one was, if I remember right, spine buster through a table, pedigree, tombstone, pedigree, something like. It's literally like watch it again and be like, count the amount of moves. I guarantee you it's under 15.
Yeah. Oh, I would agree with that. Yeah. You're right. There definitely is more in the Michaels matches. I just kind of feel like it's sort of the similar formula, just maybe even spread out a little more, but.
And now that it's been a couple of years, I need to rewatch both of them.
Yeah.
Because I remember loving the first one, and then I was just like, watching the second, I loved the second one so much more. Because I remember being like, they got us again! They did it again! How did they do this again? Because I was like at my friend's house, we're all like screaming at the TV, because we didn't know Michaels was retiring. That was a well-kept secret.
Okay. I felt like I was you know, almost certain it was because Michaels wasn't going to be Undertaker. So Michaels retiring seemed like the more likely possibility. So
I think if they really want to do this, if they, I know this is sidebar, if they really want to have the streak in question, they need Taker versus like Sheamus or Punk or someone young.
Yeah.
For us to be like, ooh, maybe. Because if they didn't give it to like the year, like the Orton year, everyone was just like, this might be over, guys. They might end the streak this year.
Yeah.
But that's an accidental goldmine they stumbled upon.
Yeah, I feel like Punk was the right, would have been the better guy. I mean, I'm fine with Triple H. They had a great match last year, you know, whatever. It should be good. But I feel like Punk is, you know, could be the right guy. And of course, I assume they're saving him for Cena at some point. So, although maybe we're running out of time for that, but who knows?
I think that they got Triple H this year, and that I think maybe next year is the last year.
Okay.
So we have to make a decision on who's going to be the last one. And I think it comes down to Sheamus, Punk, or Cena.
Yeah, that's basically what I would think, too. Yeah.
Because you got to pick someone who's going to be with the company, who's going to be hot. And Cena, honestly, Cena Taker, I think they haven't done that since, like, 2002, 2003.
Right. 03, I think. It was, I think, Judgment Day 03. But...
And that was a whole long time ago. Like, yeah. They're both different people now. Like, I think it'd be awesome. And then,
Yeah, I mean, if assuming Cena wins, it would be it would sort of be Cena's body slamming Andre moment, I think.
Yeah, I think you got to give it to like a young guy, but like young guy you know is going to stick around. You can't give it to like, you know, a Bobby Lashley or just like, "Oh, MMA's happening. Oh, peace him out. I'm out. See you guys later."
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be the right guy. I think he should lose at the end. I don't really buy this whole he should keep the streak forever thing. I
think he should lose and then just be carted out by Druids and then you never see him again. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, Undertaker needs to go out ridiculously. Because the idea is that the WrestleMania streak gives him power, then. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's interesting. That's, you know. There have been many Undertaker things involving Druids that sound worse than that, so.
Or if you really want to do it, you have him lose by someone cheating. And that's just like the biggest heel in the history of wrestling.
Yeah.
Cheated to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how they do that. I mean, there's a lot of things. But I think if next year's the last year, I think it'll be Cena. That's my personal guess. But
yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Yeah, not at all. Now we have Scott Steiner wanting another shot at Ludwig Borg, even though he's taken a lot of punishment. That doesn't go that well. He runs into a big clothesline, and then Ludwig hits a big avalanche in the corner, fouls with another clothesline. And I love that Heenan calls Borg the wrestler of the 90s here. So, Bobby, not exactly always great with pronunciation.
He literally only wrestled in the 90s.
Right, yeah. So, although, despite that, obviously the silliness of that, certainly the style here is reminiscent of, you know, the Kent Shamrock and Goldberg style, you know, which of course, you know, was big, you know, was a major thing in the 90s. So, you know, while he is in one sense very, very far off, in one another sense he is not.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I don't even remember that much about Ludwig Borga, like, other than the match. Like, I remember he wrestled Marty Jannetty. I think it was awesome.
Yeah, SummerSlam 93. Yeah. Killed him, too.
By the way, Marty Jannetty was, when they did the casket for The Undertaker, we're on number 94. I guess Jannetty was the one in the casket or something crazy.
Yeah, they, like, lift him up in the sky, like, in the Undertaker's robe.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So.
Take that, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. You didn't get to do that.
No.
Yeah.
You got to do a weird Jesus sexy dance, which I was never. That was a weird thing when he came out dressed as like Raiden, just like, I think I'm the God of Lightning. I know I'm sexy. It's like, bro, Sean, come on.
Yes, that was a little silly. I would agree. So we have Scott hitting a superplex, but then Yokozuna of all people sneaking in to break up the pin, managing to get there in time. He slams Scott, but then misses an elbow drop. Scott teases a Frankensteiner on Yokozuna, which, yeah, I don't think that's going to go well. And then Yoko gets the pin after hitting his leg drop. There was no tag there. I don't remember Yoko ever tagging Ludwig, so that you know, that was not a good thing by the referee. But
Earl Hebner's a crap ref.
he does make some major mistakes. And he has also, you know, of course, screwed over some people in the past. I've heard about certain things in which he may have screwed, you know, other wrestlers over. But
He was always bad. Like, I don't know how he was a senior official, because he always was bad.
Yeah.
He was a bad referee.
Sure.
Still is.
Well, you know, I guess if you're like, if you're around long enough, you get to be a senior referee, even if you're not particular. It's not necessarily like a you know, merit-based position.
I mean, he got paid to get surgery to screw over Hulk Hogan.
Right.
And then somehow they elevate him to senior official? What?
That was very strange. Yeah. That was even weirder than letting Danny Davis back and refereeing again, you know, or even the Nick Patrick shenanigans in WCW, you know.
At least they apologized. Earl Hebner just like, hey.
Yeah. Whatever. Hey, I
took a bath, got that evil right out of me.
Like, yeah. Nice. So we have Yoko and Ludwig commiserate for a little bit, and then Luger and Yoko trade slaps in the middle of the ring. Yoko's able to win a slugfest, and then we get Borga randomly waving the Japanese flag for a bit.
All right.
And
really,
then,
nothing else needs to be said about that other than, okay.
Yeah. And then Yoko misses a splash. Luger tries to clothesline him down repeatedly, but runs into a hard clothesline. And we're still at a point where Undertaker has not been in yet, and Heenan finally mentions this. Then we get Borga and Yoko cutting the ring in half, working Luger over for a while. The match slows to a crawl here. Eventually, Yoko misses a charge into the corner. Yokozuna gets the tag. He's a house of fire, and then he comes off the ropes and hits that huge EDT that he does off the ropes on Yokozuna. And we just get like a giant pop of, you know, this crowd is just insane for Undertaker doing this. He tries to then clothesline Yoko down again, but then Borga nails him. Taker nails Borga on the apron, but runs into a belly to belly by Yokozuna. Undertaker raises up, but then gets clotheslined down. He tries to get up again, but then his leg dropped quickly. So then we have this big setup where Yoko drags him to the corner, and he gets up on the ropes and hits his "I have murdered everyone with this move" bonsai drop, lands it. Then instead of going for a pin like he would normally do, he instead decides, you know what, I'm just going to go for a second. And then what do we get? Undertaker sits up like a zombie, and everyone goes insane. Yokozuna is frightened. Get a flying clothesline off the ropes that knocks Yoko down. They end up brawling a bit and going to the outside, and we get a double count out. What'd you think of all that?
I think that Taker sitting up second time for the bonsai drop had to have been one of the most terrifying moments of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, I better sit. He's like, if he's not sat right, his neck's broken.
Yes.
And his head's up Yokozuna's butt. Like,
right.
No, like, for real though, like, if that doesn't work out perfectly, then, like, Undertaker might, like, because, you know, Yoko, like, he puts his feet down, whatever, and then, you know, other than the time he killed that guy, who I think he literally killed. You've seen that video, right, where Yoko's feet goes up from underneath him and he just squashes the dude?
I don't think I've actually seen that.
It's a match with this guy named Dan Dubai, and so his feet, Yoko's feet, fled out, and he pretty much doesn't sit on his feet. He just goes all ass on his chest.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, and it's horrifying. Like, it's one of those just like, oh, I don't want that to happen ever. But so I thought it was, you know, it's weird. Undertaker must have been hurt. That's the only way that thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
For the fact he's only in this match for like 5 minutes and he does like three things.
Right. Right. So, and that's obviously, you know, the kind of the point of this obviously is to transfer the Yoko Luger issue into Yoko Undertaker. Which this successfully does, because they both get they fight outside into a double countout. And then we are down to Ludwig Borga and Lex Luger. And we have Borga leg dropping him. We get a side slam off the ropes. a delayed suplex for two, and then goes for a cover, which Vince refers to as an arrogant cover. Wasn't quite the Chris Jericho come on baby arrogant cover, but you know, it did seem a little lackluster, I will admit.
The 1 foot flex.
Yes.
Oh, I love that cover.
Yes. Then we get a power slam for two. Then repeated clotheslines, but Luger summons the power of America and is able to keep getting up. Borga tries a suplex, but then Luger blocks it, follows with his own, hits a double clothesline off the ropes. Both of them come off the ropes, and then they double clothesline each other. Meanwhile, Jim Cornette and Johnny Polo.
Which, by the way, I love that they all stayed at ringside.
Yes.
Like, I just love it. They're just clearly like, we need to win this match. And so they all stayed at ringside, three managers.
Cornette and Polo and, Well, Polo would actually be the only one who would have left because Cornette and Fuji would both be in there for Yokozuna.
That's true.
But yeah, but Polo, you know, he stays behind. So he's there to be helpful. They distract Earl Hebner while Luger covers Borga, and then Fuji sneaks in a bucket in which Borga is able to nail Luger in the head. But this only gets two. Then Luger makes a pretty quick comeback with punches and a DDT, hits an elbow off the ropes to the jaw, then follows with a power slam. Borga gets a few blows in, but then Luger comes off the rope sort of with a really random half leapfrog. I guess somebody forgot to knock or something, or
By the way, at one point, not to interrupt, but Borga takes this punch where he gets punched in the stomach and he keeps running forward, and like he does like the old cartoon feet don't fail me now thing into a bump.
Yes.
It's ridiculous looking.
Yes.
It's like he does a half-ass Jacques Rougeau bump.
Right.
Where he's like, oh, I better keep running. Oh, I gotta fall. And this is stupid. Like, I wish I could just YouTube that one clip because it's hilarious.
Yes. And then he nails the then Luger comes off, nails the forearm, as you mentioned before, sort of random move for the win. Although, honestly, Luger had finished matches with the forearm, I think, somewhat. So I don't think that was completely out of nowhere. But yeah, the flying forearm is the finisher. Unless you're Tito Santana, isn't something that you normally expect.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. And then I think, like, confetti that looks like rain comes down to ringside, and you forgot the best part. Santa Claus shows up.
Right. Like, right. Well, I think it's supposed to be snow. Is the, obviously the idea.
Oh, it's snow.
Yeah, and we have Vince McMahon declaring that Lex Luger has done America proud.
Oh, yes, he has. Look, I forgot, like, Santa Claus shows up.
Right.
I forgot. Oh, man, I can only imagine what I was saying as a kid. I was like, well, I guess it's Christmas. Like, Ben, Christmas is for, like, a couple months.
Right. Well, you know, it's Thanksgiving, close enough, you know.
It's like Christmas isn't – was this on Thanksgiving night?
I think it still was. I think this was the last one that was Thanksgiving night. I'm not 100% sure about that, but that's easy enough to look up. Let's see. This was Thanksgiving Eve, so Wednesday night.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. So I think they would go to Sunday's. Oh, no, 94 was Thanksgiving Eve as well.
Because I remember, because I used to watch, I think because they were Thanksgiving Eves, they were easier to watch.
Okay.
WWE should look into putting them on Thanksgiving Eve or Thanksgiving night. They should put something on Thanksgiving night because you don't do anything past, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, well, people like football, I guess, but
yeah, that's true.
95 was the first one apparently that was not Thanksgiving Eve or Thanksgiving night. So that's a good thing to learn. So the final Vince quote is a doozy. Lex Luger and Santa Claus. It can't get any better than this in the World Wrestling Federation.
Oh, it so can, Vince McMahon.
It can't. He said it there, so obviously, and I'm sure he still believes that.
I'm going to have to, if I'm Vince McMahon, be like, so Vince, did it ever get better than Santa Claus and Lex Luger?
Yeah.
And he'll be like, no.
No. It was.
It got richer! I'm going to puke.
Indeed. So, this is definitely, like, this show could not, in many ways, could not have happened in any year other than 93. I just think just kind of the way it's presented, just the characters, just, you know, obviously the talent. I mean, you know, they're WWE has a lot more, I feel like, stability in its talent now than it did in 93, where like a main event, like Luger and the Steiners were not part of WWE that much longer. You know, a couple years later, you weren't seeing them main events. And most of the heels are the same. You wouldn't see them being the main eventers. Whereas today you kind of feel like you have the same guys, you know, 2, 4, 6 years later. I mean, obviously they'll throw in and out guys, but it just feels like this is very much like a 1993 show.
Yeah, I think 1993 was a good year. See, like, I know that everyone, like, hates on the mid-90s, early 90s wrestling. But sure. I think it's a case of, for me, that's what I grew up on.
Right.
So I remember a lot of things fondly.
Yeah, maybe the rose-colored glasses a little bit.
Like, I know people who, like, they started watching wrestling in 2002. And they're weird. Like...
Right.
They're like, Luther Reigns was awesome. One, Luther Reigns, to be fair, Luther Reigns was awesome. And two, I remember, like, they're like... The stuff that, like, they know is just beyond me. But
The level of detail people have for the mid to late 2000s, I'm just like, yeah, I was not paying attention that closely then.
That's when I was just watching wrestling, being like, whatever. And then I got really into it, like, when Punk signed, I got really into it again. And then, okay. I come and go, like, I'll wake up one day and say I hate wrestling. The next day I'll be like, all right, time to watch YouTube clips for 45 hours.
Right.
Like, time to Google Honky Tonk Man. You shoot interviews. Let's do this.
It's funny how that works. It's funny how wrestling can be something that, like, you just you either, you know, you love it or you're just kind of sick of it for a while, you know. At least for me. I know there are people who are just like, you know, who are just obsessive about it and never have that period where they just kind of don't care as much. But for me, yeah, I've had those ups and downs throughout the years.
I watch it, like, every Monday, like, for the most part. At least, like, I try to watch or keep up with it.
Yeah, same here.
And when I go to a live show, and then it just, like, I go to a live show, if it's good, that gives me a guaranteed month of being really into wrestling again.
Okay.
Because, like, I don't know. It's gotten to the point where just live shows are, like, my thing, but there's just nothing good around here. So. The pain.
Indeed. Well, Ben, why don't you tell listeners about a little bit more about It's Raining Men. It's Raining Meng, and anything else that you would like to share that you're doing on the internet regarding wrestling.
Hi, itsraininmeng.com is a site that I started with my friends Alex Fitzgerald, Brian Hughes, George Hazar, and Will Haver. And we've been posting infrequently later because real life is kind of a thing that we have to deal with. And so, but pretty much it's us just kind of talking about wrestling and saying our opinions, and none of them are really that serious. We got Brian and Fitz Ruin the Classics, which is a new feature where Brian and Fitz have decided to do commentary over good matches and make fun of them, including the 1992 Royal Rumble and Mankind versus Undertaker Hell in a Cell. I write a segment on there called Pasco, Texas, every now and then, where I just kind of talk about whatever I want, ranging from why concussions aren't that big a deal to who my favorite wrestler was when I was 7. Hint, it's Coco Beware. As for some other stuff, we got friends over at Mike and Tom Present. They do a podcast. If you like 1990s wrestling, check out Joe Gagne versus the World, 1993 retrospective, which is fantastic. You should check that out over at thecubsfan.com. And program with Matt and Ben. I'm on that show at cstcnetwork.com. That's about it. I randomly dabble in a little bit of everything on and off. So.
All right. Well, sounds great. Thanks so much for being on the show, and thanks everyone for listening. And you can come back and check on us soon. We'll have more podcast goodness to bring to you. Thanks again.